Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
Not only is our next guest in town for a book signing, but he's also relearning what the word cold means. he has the event taking place tonight, so let's talk to our good friend, Mr. John Dorenbaum.
So good to be back. It's been too long, man.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, this is Rockstar. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Yeah, you were saying that until you leave an area that has winter weather for a while, you don't realize.
I'm a Southern California kid, so look, when I was done playing, I went back home, and, you know, I haven't been here in the winter in a while. Yeah. Let me tell you, when you come back, you realize this is cold. Yesterday was cold.
Well, here's the deal. It gets there's cold that you'll get here, but then you also get raw, which is the sort of moist. I know this word a lot of people like.
Great word.
But
great
it
word.
Cuts through you. So, and yeah, you're right. Being away from it, especially in that environment, you know, it's always warm and wonderful, but not so here.
It's the wind just slaps you right in the face.
Yeah.
That moist wind is just.
Yes, the moistness.
Yeah. You lived in Buffalo for a while, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And guess what? I haven't been back in the winter since.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll visit you guys in, like, September.
Oh, that, well, they. Up from there, obviously, it starts snowing in the beginning of August. So,
and Buffalo, look, Buffalo is Buffalo, great people, and it's not the cold, it's not the snow. It's like you said, it's 8 months. Like, you'll be in May and get 3 feet of snow, and you're like, whoa,
yeah,
whoa.
It's just, and they're used to it, and they laugh it off, and they, you know, but what your context is what you deal with. So we're still not thrilled with it. It's probably a few degrees colder than it should be this time, but. Hey, yeah, it's what we do. You know, move along. So,
we talked to you not that long ago about the book, but obviously you're in town, you're doing a signing, so we definitely want to talk about that more. Life is Magic, an extraordinary true story of trauma and transformation. We know all about, you know, your father murdered your mother and how traumatic that was. Is this your life story so far, the whole thing? Is that besides, you know, exploring all of that?
Yeah, so it kind of took a real big turn when my daughter was born. So it's the therapy. It's my dad's trial. It's everything that happened in between. And then 2 weeks before my daughter was born, I realized there's three words I've never said out loud. I've never said, I forgive you.
Right.
So I hit up my dad. And for the first time in 26 years, I hit him up and said, let's go to lunch. And so we sat for 5.5 hours. And I realized that if I can find motivation in the worst things that's happened in my life, that we're going to change the world and make it a better place for my daughter.
Wow. How did you reach out to him in the first place? A phone call, or an email, somebody else do it for you?
Yeah, so the NFL contacted him a long time ago to do an interview.
Okay.
And he basically was like, I'm good. And so they had his info, and I reached out to them and said, hey, do you have my dad's email still? And they said, yeah, here you go. So I just shot an email hoping it was it, and
so
it was.
So you didn't have contact with him prior to this?
26 years.
What were you expecting when the email went out? We figured it was a crapshoot, really not going to happen, or
I put myself in his shoes, and I would have been, if it was his email, right? If this is the right email, I was thinking he'd get back to me and say, yeah, you know, and he did. He said, I'm waiting for your time to be right, and it was all good. And so basically, I wanted to relive that relationship, all the pain, the hurt, the betrayal, like everything that could have been, that should have been. To instead of making excuses, to find motivation to be a better dad and realize how excited I was to be the dad I never had. And then all of a sudden live that relationship, not just through my eyes as a dad, but also through my daughter's, and actually do it for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm curious about when you sat down to write that email. I've never had to go through anything like that in my life, but I've had moments when I was, you know, like young and I wanted to ask a girl out or something, when I was taking that leap of faith, whatever it may be, that thing that you're hesitant on, but you've just got to, you just have to dive in and do it. Did you sit there and sweat over what you were going to say in that message?
Absolutely. And, okay. And you know what? You write it, and then what do? You slowly click backspace.
Yeah.
And then you just sit there, and then you write it, and then you slowly click backspace. And I realized less is more. And so literally all I wrote is, hey, it's been a long time. I have no expectations. I don't want anything from you. If you want to meet for lunch or coffee sometime, hit me up.
Wow.
Did he ever apologize to you?
You know, okay, so when I went there, I realized that I'm not going there for validation. I'm not going there for answers. And I literally treated it like I would a game plan, right? Like I had a plan, and I'm going to stick to this, and I'm there for me. And I think the most important thing that I realized is forgiveness to me for a long time was about winning and losing. It's about one-upping. It's about, if I forgive you, I'm okay with what you did. Let's be buddies. And in this process, I realized that that's not what it's about for me. It's about coming to terms with my reality, coming to terms with peace, getting rid of this burden, and just being okay with it. Like, whether you agree or not isn't the issue. Whether you accept it or not, it isn't really the issue. It's be okay with it and realize that it's not going to change, so don't let it affect your life going forward. So I didn't forgive him for what he did, but I said, I forgive you for being lost, and I forgive you for making a mistake. Yeah. And you know what? That was it. That's all I needed to do.
So how was he as a father prior to what happened?
Amazing. And to answer your question real quick, Kathy, he apologized for causing pain.
Okay.
Which was kind of like, okay. And anytime I kind of would ask a question, he'd, you know, deflect, which is fine, because then you got to step back and realize I'm not here for you. I'm here for my journey.
Yeah. Right. Well,
And real quick, so he was a great dad. Like, we played catch every day, president of Little League, president of my, you know, coached all my teams, and, like, he's...
invested and the whole deal. But to that point, and that is a macro compared to many micros that we all encounter. But, like, you know, like, my sister's brother, she loves him dearly, but he just doesn't return calls, and it frustrates her a lot. And I said, if you love what he is there, you have to love the guy who doesn't return calls. That's what it's going to be. And once you say, okay, that's it, you know, so like you say,
it's your wife's brother. You said my sister's brother.
My wife's brother.
That would make him your brother as well. But your wife's brother.
Right. But in the essence of that's basically it. So on a much larger scale, you're just not going to get some, you're not there to get, here's five things I need to hear.
No.
I
just accepted it for what it is. You know, a friend of mine broke that scenario down real easy, and he goes like this. When an idiot says something stupid, don't get angry. Don't get all mad, right? Yeah. Expect it. Yeah. When the idiot says something smart, that's when you should be shocked. You know what I mean? And I got it. So, you know, for me, when I realized that it doesn't matter what he says, whether it's good or bad, I had no expectation, and what he said didn't affect my journey, then it kind of opened up that world of it's all going to be okay. Like, I don't need this guy's validation. I just want to go say I forgive you to clear my heart and my soul to be a better dad than what I had.
I'm not aware of the situation. Are either of his parents still alive?
His mom is.
Okay.
And so he kind of takes care of his mom and his brother. And it's funny because in 5.5 hours, like, it wasn't really – it was a pretty superficial conversation. And if I would ask a question, all of a sudden he'd go on a political rant about how the prison system needs to change. Or it was very –
I don't really. Yeah, it's like you must be thinking. I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to hear about how it needs to change. But you know, in a way, that's who he is. That's what makes him. That's what made him do. It's just this concoction. We're all sort of a collection of ingredients, and so that's it. So where do you stand right now with him?
That's all. That was it.
That was it.
You know, if I ever saw him again, it would be because my wife was curious.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, I don't. What I realized is I only have so much time on this world. And when I went through my open heart surgery and all that, things kind of perspective changed on time.
Sure.
You know, I just don't really want to spend my time, you know, and it's funny because, you know, he was like, oh, I wish I knew you were here longer. We could have gone for a bike ride in the mountains. And I'm just thinking to myself,
no,
nah.
I literally told him, I go, I'm good right here.
Yeah.
But I think part of him wanted to forget everything happened and just be a father son. And there was a part of me that for a few seconds sitting at that table, that's what I like, just you forget everything. And for the first time in my life, I'm just sitting down having lunch with my dad, you know, and you just take, and then you snap out of it, you know, but
wow.
It seems to me that some people would struggle to come up with material for a book about their life. You are not one of those people. What did you leave out looking back on writing the book that maybe you wanted to put in or an editor said to take out?
You know,
I'm sure it was all that had to do with us.
The first 14 chapters are about my journey with Preston and Steve.
Right, yeah.
It would have seemed self-serving. I mean,
absolutely.
Your friendship with Nick McElwain, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I got it.
But that one goes way back. Right. Way, way, way back. You know what? I'm really proud of this. Look, it took me a long time to write this. I don't really know if I left anything out. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, you go on Amazon and you read reviews, like a game plan to evaluate, here was my goal. Am I reaching the people with the message I want? And everybody's responding with the way I hope. And that is, if you're struggling with an event or you're struggling with closure or forgiveness or something, I think there's some keys in here that I told myself that I had a process on how I found happiness. Because I've been through a lot, and a lot of people are like, yo, Dornbusch, you're like one of the happiest people I ever met. And I am. Like, I'm happy to be alive, right? So these are kind of my secrets on what I tell myself and what I've learned throughout my journey to have closure with events and to have forgiveness with people that just don't need to be in my life anymore.
Absolutely. So the name Larry Platt is attached to this book as well. That guy is like he's a machine when it comes to these sort of things.
Yeah, so basically if anybody ever did a movie on my life, I wanted it to be a guy named Mike Tolan. And he did Radio, Coach Carter, Varsity Blues.
Yeah. Great stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a Philly guy.
Yeah.
So he hits me up and goes, yo, we should do a movie. And I'm like, this is cool. Talk to me.
Yeah.
Are you writing a book? And I'm trying. Hit up Larry Platt. He'll capture your voice. I'll option the movie. Okay. Yeah, that pretty much solves that problem. Well, and Larry killed it. So we do these long, extensive interviews, right? And then he goes and he writes. And structuring a book is hard. Like, the last thing I wanted is then I turned 13. And then right. I turned 14. Yeah. And then on my 17th birthday, it's hard to structure it. And he did a great job.
So speaking of finding your voice, you're the one who voiced the audiobook. By the way, the book's hard. Available everywhere.
Yep.
And so you can get it on Amazon. I listened to a little bit excerpt. And it was like, oh, so because I was curious to see who actually narrated the book, and it was you.
Well, so I assumed you do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, but, like, it'd be weird if some British guy was telling my story.
My name
I just
is
assumed.
John Turnbull.
Yes, like. So,
I prestidigitation is my calling card.
Like, and then when I was like, yo, so when do I do the audiobook? They were like, you want to do your own audiobook? I'm like, sure. Yeah. I thought it'd be cake. Dude, let me tell you, for a guy that actually in school and I talk about it, I didn't have a learning disability, but like reading comprehension, reading out loud is really hard for me. So to go in with that, doing an audiobook and reading out loud is really hard for
how
me.
Long?
They're
how long?
They're trained journalists.
Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh.
Like people who are broadcasters who do this for a living, who will never do their own audiobooks for that very reason.
Yeah.
There's sort of an art to it. How long?
I'm good on a teleprompter.
Yeah.
I'll kill a teleprompter, right? But,
right.
like, reading my own book was really hard. So it
how
was
long?
Four 14, 15-hour days.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there were some times where I'd read a sentence like 10 times. And then finally I'd be like, guys, I got to get out of this room. And then the room starts spinning. You're like, oh, my gosh. And then you're embarrassed. Because then every once in a while I'd be like, I'll tell you what's really bad, right, is you say words, but you don't really know how to spell them. You know what I mean? It's really bad when you're doing your audiobook and then you pause and you're like, excuse me, Bob, how do I pronounce that word right there?
It's your own book.
That's hippopotamus, John.
Ah, yes.
Yes, thank you. Well, John, that's kaleidoscope. Ah, yes.
Yes, of course it is.
Of course it is.
Casey was listening when I came in, and there was a section of that he was listening to about you, talking about talking to yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm a big proponent of that as well. I do it all the time. And, you know, I think what happens is it there may be an issue if you start hearing answers, you know. But, I mean, if you're talking to yourself, and describe how you use that as a tool.
So here's the way I look at it, right? There's a voice in all of our heads that basically just tells you to quit sometimes, tells you to give up, tells you to doubt yourself. I just change that narrative and change that voice, and I have my whole life. And instead, I talk to myself out loud, and then I hear myself. So therefore, I'm listening to the words versus listening to the doubt in my own head.
Wow.
And when you talk to yourself, you change the narrative of where you're going. Like, even all my passwords, right? They all change, and it's where I'm going to be. It could be materialistic, it could be spiritual, it could be emotional. It doesn't matter. But all my passwords to my garage and my emails, they're always changing to where I want to go. So, one, they're changing. And two, I type this password all day, every day, and I'm telling myself where I'm going. And
right.
I believe that the words that you tell yourself and you speak to yourself, the way you view yourself, the way that you empower yourself is the same way you're going to view the world, the same way you're going to talk to the world, the same way you're going to change the world.
And how much of this is self-taught? How much have you, you know, picked up, I don't know, through therapy or whatever? Because, I mean, this is really salient advice.
You know, I had therapy when I was a kid for a long time, and I had a great therapist, and I had a family that loved me. And I was at an age that I was influenced, right? And so you're at an age where you're trying to figure the world out and you're old enough to understand. You know, just from the time I can remember and after therapy, I just knew that I wanted to bring pride back to my last name. I didn't want people to hear the last name Dornbos and think of a murder. Yeah. And so I wanted to make my mom proud, and just these little things that – and then I realized that, you know, my mom's life got cut so short. I don't know when mine's going to be gone. So there's a lot of fun things to do in this world, so you better get busy.
So you made a choice to be on America's Got Talent while you were still actively playing football. And I just wanted to know if that was a calculated move, if it was something that were like, let me try this. Or if you thought, man, if I were to do this, it probably would be better for me if I was still actively in the game.
Now, actually, a buddy of mine, Chris Judd, he's a dancer. He goes, dude, you should do America's
Got
Talent.
Wait a
second. Chris Judd from
J-Lo's?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
Great dude. Such a nice guy. Yeah, so Chris is a good friend of mine. He goes, John, you should do this show. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. John, you should do this show. I'm good. John, do the show. Okay, I'll do the show. So he sent some footage, and the producers called and said, yo, it was Sunday. They're like, yo, can you film in front of the judges on Tuesday? Yeah, okay, I'll do this. And so my thought was I'll just hopefully get Simon to say a few things, promote my speaking career, opt out, go to training camp.
Yeah.
Well, I went to the next round, then I was going to opt out, and then they gave me that gold buzzer. So I was like, okay, this is interesting. Like, team doesn't even know I'm doing this, right?
Yeah.
So then I showed up, and then the Eagles were like, yo, I'll never forget this. They're like, yo, this is amazing. Why didn't you tell us? I know training camp's starting. I know they're filming the lives. like, we got to make this work for you. And I was kind of blown away that they were, like, on board. And Jeff Lurie goes, you know, John, let's be honest. It's not like you're the quarterback. It's not like you're, you know.
Good point. Yeah.
And I was like, good point, Jeff. I'm almost an athlete, but not quite.
You know? Not true. Not true.
And they made it work, man. And I didn't miss a practice. I didn't miss a
special
teams meeting. Didn't miss a game. And for me, it was the ultimate because I was playing in the NFL. And when we played Cleveland on the home opener, I got on a jet and went to L.A. And I was performing on – well, first of all, to get on a jet was sick, by the way.
Yeah. Right?
It was expensive, but it was so worth it. But to get on the stage of America's Got Talent, I was performing my two loves on the biggest stages of the world simultaneously. Like, for me, that was really cool.
It is wild. And now, honestly, so you got this deal with this on Ellen's YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's cool.
Ellen Tube.
Which right. her digital platform's just
tons
monstrous.
Of stuff. She populates it with fresh content all the time. So explain the show that you're doing.
It's called Let Me In So You Can Win. It's a game show, and we basically show up in neighborhoods and just we create a game show in your neighborhood, and you can win tons of money, cars, and we're trying to kind of reward people that do good things in their community, and then you get neighbors competing against each other, and it's been a lot of fun. So it's basically self-explanatory. I'm going to knock on your door, so just let me in so you can win.
So you, obviously, you've got to, now, we've asked this before, but I want to know how far it's progressed. How buddy-buddy are you with Ellen? Are you drop by, buddy? Are you, I'm calling ahead before, I'm on my way, I'll see you next month.
Or
she just knows your name.
You know, let's just say there are times that my wife looks over and says, hey, if she wasn't, you know, a little bit older and married to Portia, this would not be okay. You know what I mean? Wow. We're buddies. She is amazing, and she cares so much. And the fact that she's gone all in to help me and just say, hey, how can I help you? And I'm doing what you do. It's awesome.
Then I want to know if, because she has this gorilla sanctuary that she's ever got. Can you get us a gorilla?
Wait a minute. There's one outside. I brought him.
I do get a gorilla.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm going to ask for something selfishly because our Camp Out for Hunger is coming up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If you could drop her a note and let her know that, I mean, it's literally the largest single food drive in the entire country. I mean, last year
I'd like to go further and say the universe.
In the universe.
Well, probably. Well, I mean, maybe. Yeah. But, I mean, we have figures to back this sort of stuff up. But, like, I mean, millions of pounds of food are raised every single year. You know, even if it's something she just wants to kind of like spotlight for 5 seconds in a monologue or whatever. I don't even know.
Shoot me the details.
I will shoot you the details. Now, how did you do the gumball trick?
Oh, that was fun.
Okay.
Yeah, with
so
BG,
explain
it's on
to these
social.
Guys what you did.
Yeah, you basically rip a card up, we restore it, but then there's one piece missing, and it was like across the locker room in a gumball machine wrapped in a piece of gum. It was killer. BG loved it. So I'll post it on Instagram when I leave here. The Eagles posted it. That was a fun one, man. That was a fun one.
I ripped up a piece. And then he went to the gumball machine, and I'm like, this, I don't.
I got lucky.
Did you?
You're the devil. So how long do you take working? I mean, obviously, there are tricks and illusions and things that other magicians will work on, and sometimes they buy from each other, and sometimes you research and do your own. How actively are you, because your schedule's so full, creating your own stuff?
Dude, it's nonstop, right? So content is king, and when you're on TV as much as I am, which is great, it's a great problem to have, you got to come up with material, especially on Ellen. So I got a great creative team, I got a great builder, and you just do the R&D, and you just hash stuff out.
I know we got to wrap it up soon, but you're at the free library tonight?
Yep, free library tonight.
So we actually have two pairs of passes to give away, Preston. Sorry to drop this on you last minute, but two pairs
of
passes.
I got a note here.
Got it? Okay, and then two books as well.
I love it. Hey, thank you, guys. Go to lifeismagic.com. Go anywhere books are sold. Barnes & Noble's, doesn't matter. I definitely appreciate you guys. And if you're struggling, trying to find forgiveness or closure, I really think this book can help out because it changed my life.
All right. Well, let's give away a pair of tickets in the books right now. We'll take caller number 20 at 215-263-WMMR. Do you know what time you appear tonight, John? What time does he appear tonight? Yeah, yeah. Nobody knows.
You know what? This is a great thing. It's called Google. Have some fun.
Figure that out.
It's 7:30 tonight. 7:30. At the free library in Center City, Philadelphia.
We'll be signing books.
Everybody in the city is very proud of you,
sir. I love you, man.
So I love you guys. John Dorenbos, guys.
Rock on.
Get the whole Preston and Steve Show or the Bizarre Files podcast at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.